from the Commercium Society here at St. Xavier's College, Mumbai. I'm Krisha Gandhi and this is the Fin Fiends Playbook.
But climate change is a tragedy of the horizon. And we don't need an army of action.
In his 2015 speech, the governor of the Bank of England, Mark Carney, gave his audience of world-class bankers an alarming warning. If climate change continued on its current trajectory, it would threaten the world's financial stability, leading to what he called the tragedy of the horizon. And since the worst impact of climate change wouldn't be felt until the next generation, the investors of today have little incentive to change their polluting and unsustainable behaviors. In December of 2018, at the COP24 conference in Poland, activists sported badges that yelled, "WTF, where's the finance?" There have been a lot of loud and urgent screams in the climate action community in recent years, but very little movement forward, much like an ambulance stuck in traffic. Today, we look at why economies and markets around the world have dragged their feet on commitments to finance a sustainable future, and how time for a panacea called green finance may be on the horizon.
In a 2021 report, the UN Environment Programme warned that even with climate pledges, global surface temperatures will reach 2.7 degrees Celsius this century, which is well over the target of 1.5 degrees Celsius made under the Paris Climate Agreement. A rise that high can have devastating consequences for economies. A study estimates the global economy will lose 10% of its value by 2050 if global temperatures rise at its current rate. Climate change threatens South Asia, including India, as a region most vulnerable to the effects of global warming. According to the World Bank, climate change-related losses could average $160 billion in the region by 2030 and would backtrack efforts to alleviate poverty and improve standards of living through economic growth and job creation.
Funding for climate action largely comes from four sources: multilateral development banks and international financial institutions, UN agencies, government funding, and finally, the private sector, that's investors, corporations, and philanthropies. Funding for India, however, is a bit of a sticky wicket, for India would have to turn to private capital for its green transformation, given the steep costs and investments needed, underdeveloped financial markets in the country, and a shortfall in domestic institutional investors. Rapidly rising sea levels, extreme weather events, high temperatures, and air pollution. These are all clear risks faced by businesses in terms of customer bases, resource availability, and supply chains. Managing these can be challenging, especially when funds are scarce or other priorities take precedence. Enter green finance, a panacea that could ameliorate risks, put change within reach, and signals to investors that a business is investing in a sustainable future. Essentially, green finance is entities, especially businesses, securing finance to make adjustments to both their operations and projects that are more sustainable. And this can be in many forms. A simple fix like investing in energy-efficient light bulbs, developing transformation systems to increasingly adopt electric vehicles, or even instituting a waste management strategy. Business planning and long-term strategy increasingly focus on sustainability, and green finance can help companies develop and deliver these strategies across their operations. green finance is a lens that looks over a range of business activities, from trade finance and cash management to supply chains, branding, and consumer positioning. It's also an instrument for banks to leverage their trusted client relationships and push them to evolve their strategies and long-term planning. While green finance is an umbrella term that refers to a larger goal of supporting projects that tackle climate change, climate finance is a subset of green finance that consists of mitigation measures of GHG emissions and adaptation to climate change. Climate finance accounted for 96% of total green finance, and over 88% of climate finance goes towards funding green energy.
It's now been 6 years since the Paris Climate Agreement was adopted, and 5 years since the international treaty aimed at limiting global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius became legally binding. But a report from six NGOs called Banking on Climate Chaos found that in that time, the 60 biggest private banks in the world have financed $3.8 trillion in fossil fuels. And campaigners say that money has funded projects which have consequences for communities around the world.
In countries like Malaysia, most banks no longer fund fossil fuel, oil, and gas power plant type activities which can hurt the environment. And for good reason, since the primary source of power generation in most developing countries is in fact fossil fuels. Of course, banks can't simply stop funding all fossil fuel-based projects at the drop of a hat, not without a transition plan that allows for the gradual phasing out of conventional energy. India's green finance sector is still at a nascent stage today. A study estimated that India could only mobilize $18 billion in climate investments in 2018, compared to the annual requirement of $160 billion, meaning an excess of 9 times its current investments will be needed to meet just the commitments made before the recently concluded Glasgow Climate Pact, where India made even more climate resolutions.
And if you look at 2017, bonds were about 95% of all the investment into green energy. Today, that's in the Western world, it's about 70-30. But in the Indian context, it's almost entirely bonds. Banks are not financing in India, even renewable energy. So to go to the next level.
Most of green financing is sourced from debt. But the problem with trying to address climate change with debt is that debt distress is at historic levels. When the pandemic struck, the threat of a sudden stop to capital flows and a full-blown financial crisis loomed at large. Furthermore, debt financiers, particularly banks, see energy-efficient industrial equipment as a risky proposition due to a lack of credible historical data on the energy efficiency of new equipment, as well as a perceived risk that the equipment may not yield adequate financial savings. Lenders would also find it difficult to separate and use as collateral a piece of equipment once it has been integrated into a facility. Defaulting borrowers may leave debt financiers with stranded assets difficult to liquidate in secondary markets. A company adopting a technology that reduces emissions will usually be left with a Hobson's choice: issue fresh equity or raise debt. The former offers a lower return on equity, and the latter isn't efficient as it demands a higher coupon rate. Clearly, India Incorporated would need a jumpstart to spur both funding for and initiative to implement transitions to sustainable practices. More than $40 billion poured into climate tech startups worldwide, but India received a paltry sum of $445 million. To secure more climate funding, India needs to unlock local demand. November of 2021, the Solar Energy Corporation of India held an auction for over 1 gigawatt of solar power capacity. For perspective, 1 gigawatt is enough to power around 750,000 homes. This auction was a crucial win for bidders. For Saudi Arabia-based Al Jumeirah Energy and Water Company, this win would help its foray into the Indian market. For Singapore-based Green Infra Wind and Energy, a win would mean a 40% growth in their portfolio. With so much at stake, both companies made a bid for the lowest solar tariff ever in India, ₹2 per kilowatt hour. Green Infra won 400 megawatts. Al Jumeirah got 200 megawatts. But the third winner made heads turn. Unlike the previous two winners, this wasn't a foreign entity looking to get a foot in the door. No, no. It was India's largest power producer, state-owned NTPC Limited, formerly known the National Thermal Power Corporation. NTPC won 470 megawatts at ₹2 per kilowatt hour.
Although NTPC uses a range of sources, coal, gas, hydro, wind, and even solar, renewable sources account for a mere 2% of its production. NTPC has, however, picked up on cues hinting at the need to transform and leave behind fossil fuel-based energy. And it fully aims to do just that. In October of 2020, NTPC set up a subsidiary, NTPC Renewable Energy Limited, as its first step towards actualizing its goal of green energy accounting for 25% of its portfolio by 2032. It currently stands at 102%. This may seem a daunting task as NTPC is looking at acquiring operational solar projects worth 5,000 crore rupees. Doubling down on its commitment, the energy behemoth will not set up any new coal plants.
But NTPC Renewable Energy Limited knew that sourcing green finance would require it to list itself on the bursas, which it is currently in the process of. But this would be a rocky road in the face of intensifying competition and record low tariffs. Moreover, public market investors aren't particularly enthused by clean energy companies and their stable returns.
India work toward meeting their climate commitments over the next decade, they're turning to companies focused on renewable energy. One such company that's hoping to electrify the market is Renew Power, based in India. They just went public today on the Nasdaq via a SPAC merger. The deal is worth $8 billion, which could be a green light for other Indian companies looking to reap the most reward from going public here in the U.S. So joining us now is
Gurugram-based company Renew Power found a way around it. A backdoor to the public market. Renew Power became the first major Indian company to go public through a merger with a special purpose acquisition company, the Nasdaq-listed RMG Acquisition Corp. II. Merging with an SPAC was a wise move for a company that 3 years ago made a failed attempt to go public. For it was likely that an IPO would have given it the $4.4 billion valuation it got from this merger. SPACs are essentially shell companies with no actual running operations or business activities. Its sole purpose is to raise funds through an IPO and then acquire or merge with an actual running company like Renew. This saved Renew from having to go to the traditional route like it did with its IPO in 2018. Where it sought $4 billion, a number that then had investors baffled, especially for a power company. Renewable energy will often find interest with pension funds and sovereign wealth funds because of their stable returns. But this is the very thing stock market investors are averse to. Moreover, renewable energy projects have regulated tariffs over a 20 to 25-year long period, which capped the profits companies could receive. But the business ecosystem and the global markets at large have picked up on the increasing need and popularity surrounding green energy and are inclined to keep a close eye.
Despite Mukesh Ambani's many attempts to champion data as the new oil, the actual oil, crude oil, forms the very core of his company Reliance Industries. Much like the conglomerate ITC and cigarettes, crude refining and petrochemicals account for a majority of Reliance's revenues, despite its ever-expanding presence in retail and telecom. But cognizant of the sun setting on the oil sector, the shrewd chairman of Reliance knows that with concentrated efforts around the globe to reduce carbon emissions, oil consumption could fall by at least 50% in the next three decades. Big Oil's waning fortune is exactly what pushed Ambani to make Reliance a telecom and retail giant, convincing the likes of Google and Facebook to even pump billions into Reliance's digital and retail arm.
Year, Mr. Mukesh Ambani had made it clear that he is going to pivot towards clean energy, green energy. I mean, I would say 60% of this group's revenues come from fossil fuels, and it's a massive pivot when Reliance Industries decides to go green. In that larger picture,
not one to miss an opportunity, Ambani has set his eyes on revamping Reliance's energy business, initiating talks with global investors to raise $3 billion in equity to fuel its plans for a renewable energy business.
Digital divide in India. Now, in 2021, we are launching our new energy business with the aim of bridging the green energy divide in India and globally.
He has also set the ball rolling with an ambitious plan of pumping over $8 billion into setting up new manufacturing plants to make solar panels, electrolyzers, and fuel cells. To top it off, Reliance has also pledged a whopping $80 billion investment package to help Gujarat achieve net zero emissions by 2035. Talk about going all in. Various financial instruments have emerged over time that can assist in combating climate change risks by compensating nations and communities that are affected. Whether derivatives, whether insurances, water futures, and other climate-linked financial products compensate for financial losses resulting from climate variability and can help the adaptation process. Private equity, pension funds, and development finance institutions can do more to fund India's aggressive clean energy plans, but the Indian market is still nascent. The banking sector has been India's backbone, a major source of funding for industries even as bond and equity markets have grown exponentially alongside it. This makes it a major driver in mitigating the impacts of climate change and supporting the transition towards net zero through green finance. Large infrastructure projects, like making energy-efficient buildings, remaking the power grid to supply clean energy, and expanding carbon capture, require a massive financial boost of up to $2 trillion. The banking sector can support these transitions through a range of activities, like assessing the risks and opportunities in financing sustainable transitions. Much like their counterparts in Malaysia, Indian banks have introduced internal policies to reduce lending to carbon-intensive sectors, resulting in businesses in these sectors to rethink their operations and turn to greener production methods. Banks such as Yes Bank and Axis Bank have also issued green bonds, securities that specifically fund sustainable and climate-resilient projects. Though there is still a long way to go, as green bonds are only a drop in the ocean compared to the total size of bond issuance in India, 0.7% of total bonds to be exact. Various other instruments, like sustainability-linked bonds, too have been introduced. But the market, much like that of green bonds, has yet to evolve to be able to close the climate finance gap India currently faces, though they have definitely caught the attention of Indian investors. Sustainability and the opportunities green finance offers businesses cannot be ignored, no matter how challenging securing finance may seem today. Besides the fact that it is the need of the hour, voices of different stakeholders are increasingly becoming louder, pressuring businesses to become sustainable. Avoiding transitions to sustainability leaves businesses with stranded assets and may even lead to loss of interest among investors, who demand transparency and are shifting their capital towards leaders in sustainability. Green finance and investments are the best way to signal to communities that businesses are truly taking steps towards reducing carbon emissions and tackling climate change. Soon, companies will come to see that green finance is a good business, an opportunity they will increasingly be unable to ignore. A dark horse bidding its time.
Fintech's Playbook is brought to you by Thinkdesk, the official blog of the Commercium Society. Follow Fintech's Playbook on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Check out the Thinkdesk blog for all things business and follow Commercium on Instagram at Commercium Xavier's for updates on events, workshops, and more. Head over to our blog and read our latest piece. Commerce is hard. Let's talk about it on the Fintech's Playbook.